And we're back on the Chad Hastie Show, the Saturday edition of the Chad Hastie Show. I'm Matt Crowe, filling in for Chad. You normally hear me on the weekday mornings doing the news over there in the news desk. I've got Ariel Walden as our producer today. Thank goodness for that, as I've said a few times before. And sitting across from me now is Dr. Don May. Don is, many of you know, is running for Congress. He's going to challenge Randy Neugebauer in the Republican primary, and that primary vote is in March. And Don has announced his candidacy. He announced a few weeks ago at Texas Tech. He and his wife, Jane, of course, live here in Lubbock. Don is a longtime medical professional, ophthalmological surgeon, also a former Air Force officer, and I think most importantly to West Texans, has got a lot of experience in the farming business, and Jane's family rather in the farming business. So ag issues are very important to Don, and of course Obamacare as well. Don, I want to ask you a couple things just off the top of your head. The vote on extending or raising the debt ceiling, rather, that was a tough vote for a lot of conservatives in Congress a week or so ago to end the shutdown. How would you have voted on that?
Well, Matt, it was a very tough vote, and one of the issues that we have and that I am continually concerned about is the Republicans' ability to articulate exactly what they're doing, and letting the opposing party, the Democrats, and the news media direct the interpretation of what's happening. The intent there was to not fund Obamacare. Mm-hmm. To defund Obamacare, not specifically to shut down the government.
So you would have voted no?
I would have voted not to fund Obamacare. Mm-hmm. Because let's take a look at the whole issue. The issue was raised was Obamacare was passed, it's law.
Right.
Well, how it was passed by making an assumption that a certain vote took place, it was passed in a very unusual way, and it was passed in opposition to the majority of the American people. But then appropriately it went to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't agree with the ruling that came down out of the court. I thought they went to a lot of effort to turn this rather into a mandate rather than a tax. But what it comes down to is that division of power. Mm-hmm. And why we have that division of power is to make sure that if something shouldn't happen, it doesn't happen.
So, to interrupt you, but you'd agree then with the strategy.
The strategy was
right on the Republicans' part, on leadership's part, to link the funding of Obamacare with the government shutdown.
Basically, the funding of Obamacare was a separate issue. It was tied in with the government shutdown because President Obama decided that he was going to not abide by what the House was doing. Here, let me get to the point. Mm-hmm. The point is that the House, all funding originates in the House. Mm-hmm. So if something's law and the Supreme Court says it's law, the House can say, we don't agree with that and we're not going to pay for it. So it doesn't happen. But what Obama did, rather than not put funding into Obamacare, all the funding continued to go into Obamacare. The Obamacare came into being, registration mechanism went online, even though that was in failure, and basically defunded other parts of the government, whereas the House said specifically, it's Obamacare that's not being funded.
As you talk to other medical professionals across West Texas and hospital administrators and providers, this has been such a debacle with the rollout. I mean, just leaving alone the Obamacare, the pros and cons of a national health care system, we'll just kind of leave that alone for a second. But
right.
Should people be worried about this? As far as, I mean, if I didn't have health insurance and I needed health insurance and I was worried about health insurance and I went to the site to sign up for this, I mean, not only am I not going to be able to sign up for it right now, I may be penalized, but how is the medical establishment dealing with all this? I mean, what's happening to the relationships between doctors and patients and hospital administrators and doctors through all this?
This is devolving into fear and into chaos because, Matt, all we're looking at here is the implementation of the sale of a new way of selling healthcare insurance. Mm-hmm. Obamacare has nothing to do really about health care. It's insurance and the government taking over control of the health insurance industry. And what we've seen is they cannot even implement a basic website to handle the volume of people who are signing up. So they had government contracted employees come in. They did a bad job. So they've gone out to get other private industry people. But what we're coming down line is if we can't sell, put a plan together to sell insurance, how can we have a plan to put together to deliver the health care? This is going to be an absolute disaster because mandated in this, if a physician sees a patient, they've got to put in the diagnoses into the computer and the computer will kick back what they can do and what they can't do.
How do you feel about being a candidate for Congress and a doctor at the same time? I mean, is this fortuitous or is this a coincidence
is this
great timing or bad timing?
What brought me into the political arena more than 20 years ago, 25 years ago, was agriculture and the problems that we as farmers had with the federal government putting all kinds of regulations on what we can do, what we can't do, huge amounts of taxes, death tax on the farm. The farmer is under just absolute tremendous burden. And that was what initially brought me into the idea of healthcare. I was going to move back to my home district in Illinois and run for an open U.S. House seat there. Decided that we liked West Texas and that the people here were very conservative.
Oh, there's no comparison between Central Illinois and West
Texas. We've still got the farm problem.
Yep.
We've got the problem with the farm program. I have a military background. We have problems with our military losing credibility, using ability to carry out our mission. And now we've got a massive health care program. And I have an interest in this. I was one of the first three surgeons that helped put together the Health Organization Management MBA program at Texas Tech. I was a professor in that program for 12 years. We taught MBA students. Now that MBA, one can get that with an MD or a JD. This fits in with the health economics, which is also my background.
You mentioned agriculture. It's interesting because the congressional delegation on the Hill that represent ag districts and rural districts is growing fewer and fewer. The power behind the rural caucuses, the farm caucuses, the ag caucuses, slowly being diluted. They just don't have the horsepower they used to, and it's going to be a real challenge in the next 5 or 10 years with members of Congress, new members who come to the Hill and members who are already there to really, you know, fight for the rights of small producers and farmers, medium-sized producers. I mean, the big ag people, the Cargills and the Archer Daniel Midland, I've got nothing against Archer Daniel Midland and Cargill, but they've got their huge army of lobbyists and lots of money behind their interests. As most Fortune 500 corporations do and industries do, if you go to the Hill, what are you going to do for the cotton producers in West Texas? What are you going to be looking out for?
We need representation of what the cotton producers need. We've got cotton producers here, sorghum producers, peanut producers. We have a wide variety, and now we have dairy farmers, and we've always had feedlots. So the needs of the farmers are number one, as far as I'm concerned, is to get the federal government off their back and to get regulations and rules off the back that don't do anything beneficial.
Have you got any farmers advising you, any ag producers advising you?
Several people. We've been well represented in this area. We had two of the strongest people in Congress in this district at one time, Larry Combest and Charlie Stenholm. And they have a number of people who have worked with them. I have a number of Farm Bureau people who are helping me. I have friends who are a number of farmers, cotton farmers. I'm actively a grain producer. I raise corn and soybeans. We do commercial fruit farming in Illinois. My wife's family does commercial fruit farming in California. So we not only have an insight from this area, but we have an insight from the Midwest and from the West Coast, which are the three primary breadbasket areas in the country. And we also have this farm bill that's hung up.
And farmers, it's not going anywhere right now.
It's not going anywhere. We have this. We have, unfortunately, it's been coupled with the food stamp program. My opinion is these two things need to be decoupled because they're totally separate entities.
All right. Well, we're going to come back to that point because ag, of course, is one of the big gorillas in West Texas. We got another minute or so. You know, it just seems to me that between agriculture and Texas Tech and the medical establishment here in West Texas, you've got three really strong economic drivers. We're going to talk about those more when
extremely
we come back.
Important. They're yeah. critical, not only for this area, but for the whole nation.
Yeah.
Saturday, and time for the Chan Hastie Show on News Talk 790 KFYO, a not-so-serious show about pop culture, entertainment, sports, stupid criminals, and stories that make you laugh. Call in now, 770-5790, or NTS toll-free at 1-800-687-0790. The Chan Hastie Show on the news and talk of West Texas, News Talk 790 KFYO.
Well, it's no surprise right now. This isn't Chad Hastie. It's Matt Crow from the KFYO News Desk. And Chad is off on a well-earned vacation doing what? I have no idea. And even if I did know, I probably wouldn't be able to tell you. But he's I think he's left town, hasn't he, Ariel? Isn't he? He's out of the state. But at any rate, I've got Dr. Don May in the studio today. After Don's on, we're going to have Brian Walsh, Fox News contributor and MSNBC contributor, talk about national politics. But for right now, we're concentrating on West Texas politics because Don's running for Congress. He's going to run against, or he is running against, Randy Neugebauer, who's our incumbent congressman here in Texas District 19, which is, many of you know, and if you don't know, is one of the largest congressional districts in the United States. As I was talking to Don at the break, we were talking about how we relax, and Don was telling me he was doing some heavy yard work with a chainsaw, which I guess a doctor with a chainsaw is kind of an interesting vision in my head, especially an eye surgeon, because you're used to working with more delicate tools. How long, as far as eye operations concerned, you were in the Air Force. Did you deal with high-speed ejection injuries and windshield glass injuries?
My expertise was severe ocular trauma. I was the first ocular trauma surgeon in the U.S. military.
So aircraft pilots who'd suffered trauma to their eyes in high-speed ejections or explosion, what have you?
Yes, we operated on those. I operated on injuries that went back to before World War II, mm-hmm. World War II injuries, Vietnam injuries. I received my commission in 73, mm-hmm. and the Air Force specifically wanted a retina surgeon who had ability to treat severe eye trauma. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't shortly after I received my commission that the Congress pulled us out of Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I had planned to spend my time in the Air Force in Saigon or in Japan putting together acute severe eye trauma because we were mm-hmm. losing so many dozens of eyes over there mm-hmm. because the expertise didn't exist to take care of them. So we saw exploding windshields. We saw pieces of plexiglass in mm-hmm. people's eyes mm-hmm. and shrapnel that had gone through. We had an ejection seat explode in a hangar one time mm-hmm. and injured several people severely. So there's never an end to trauma because even when the military is not in a war, there are a couple thousand people in our military getting killed and injured every year.
You know, that's an amazing, precise medical procedure, which I'm sure takes hours when you're operating on the human eye. And just to kind of draw an analogy, if you go to the Hill, if you go to Congress, the crafting of bills, the crafting of legislation, takes weeks, months, sometimes years. It's a long, drawn out process. One of the things that I've seen, happening on the Hill in the last couple of years is the ability for either the Democrats, the Republicans to compromise with each other to get legislation passed. How would you describe yourself? What's your view on compromising when it comes to legislation or compromising when it comes to the budget, and just working with Democrats. How do you see yourself doing that?
One of the problems that we have, Matt, is we got in the trouble we're in by compromising. We've spent $17 trillion on welfare programs that were get along. The Republicans saying, "Okay, we'll go halfway with you." Well, we keep going halfway every time we go halfway further and further to the left, and we get programs that we don't need. And the problem with the federal government, once we have a program, it doesn't stop. It's the closest thing to never ending.
Yeah, like a zombie.
It's a zombie. You can't kill it. And the one of the things, of course, that we really need, like we have in the state of Texas, is we need to have everything that's done up there on the hill sunsetted to some degree, unless, of course, it's an amendment to our Constitution. And my approach to writing bills is, we're not going to solve any problems with the large bills that are coming through. A 100-page bill or a 1,000-page bill or a 2,000-page bill, everybody's putting something in there. My concept is when bills go through, they should be a clean bill addressed at one issue without other things tacked on. And we just saw recently bills going through that had even the Republicans were tacking on goodies. Yeah. And if they want to spend something, if they want to fix a road or build a bridge or whatever, put through a bill. My concept of a bill is 3 to 10 pages, clean. It addresses a certain issue. I look at it as a scalpel in the hands of a skilled surgeon. Mm-hmm. We go in there, we cut out the bad parts, we leave the good parts, and the good parts prosper.
I want to get to what differentiates you from Randy Neugebauer in a few minutes, but before I do that, let me hit some high level issues that have come before Congress in the last couple of weeks. Federal Reserve, President Obama is going to, or has nominated rather, Janet Yellen to replace Bernanke. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky has said that he is going to hold up her nomination, hold up her appointment to the Fed, the vote, unless there's an audit of the Federal Reserve. What's your take on the Federal Reserve as far as good or bad for the United States? Has it served us well? Has it not served us well?
I don't think it has served us very well. I think that whole system needs to be looked at, and we need to look very seriously as Rand Paul, who is a very esteemed senator, a friend of mine, a fellow ophthalmologist. Mm-hmm. He and I have worked together. A couple of years ago, he and I were the speakers for a Heritage Foundation program one night. And I got a chance to talk a lot to him. But I think he has very, very good economic ideas, a very good perception on the Federal Reserve. And I think we need an audit because we don't know what's going on there. We have a Federal Reserve right now who's doing quantitative easing, who is basically printing money and selling it to the Treasury, and the money that's being printed has nothing to back it. If we look at his nominee, I mean, basically she's a Keynesian economist.
Right.
The idea of these people is that the economy is best handled by a central government with centralized people making all of the decisions. And you and I
think the Soviets tried that for a long time.
The Soviets tried that for a long time. They tried it with their agriculture. They had a man by the name of Lysenko who said that he could manipulate the genetic structure of wheat. He could take high producing summer wheat, freeze the seed in freezers for 3 months, and then plant it, and it would become a vigorous winter wheat. Well, they've had bad crops for over 4 decades, and without the United States helping them out, more people would have starved to death than they did.
And how many million, exactly?
How many million people were killed, and how many hundreds of people who opposed Lysenko were killed because he was a good buddy of Stalin. But the problem is, the idea is that the government is the creator of jobs, government is the creator of wealth. As Obama said, you didn't make that. You didn't create that. The specific words were, you didn't build that. And you and I, as small business people, each of us has done small business. You're working as a news director. You're your own small business. You are successful because of the time you put in. You put in so many hours here in the studio, but you put in lots of other hours educating yourself, preparing, and so forth. And you've done that all your life. That's your input into that. I'm successful as a farmer, I was successful as a surgeon and an economist because I put in lots of dedicated effort. It wasn't what the government gave me. The infrastructure that exists here, the roads that got me here, the stoplights that got me here, they were put there because we directed that they put here, not because there was some superior intelligence out there saying we're going to put this together.
Another sensitive topic on the Hill is immigration reform.
Yes.
And many people expect that to come to the forefront.
Yes,
in the next
absolutely.
Couple weeks. And a lot of people are saying, a lot of the pundits and a lot of the media talking heads and even members of leadership both on the House or the Senate side are saying, you know, this is another disaster in the making possibly for the Republican Party if we don't appear to be making progress with solid immigration reform. And then conversely, if the Republicans appear to be giving immigrants a raw deal or people who are here in the country illegally, not providing them a path for legal citizenship or trying to put the screws to their children or put the screws to them. Texas is a unique state. We're a border state. I'm from California, so a border state as well, so I think I understand the role that illegal immigrants have played, maybe weren't supposed to play, but do play, migrant farm workers here in Texas and in California. But immigration reform, now there are, particularly the Hispanic population, is quite large here in Texas, quite large here in West Texas. Many of the people you're going to be asking for their vote are Hispanic who live here. I think that's going to be an issue that you're going to need to address. So just we've got about 40 seconds before we go to the break. Immigration reform, is this something the Republicans can score a touchdown
on? Oh, absolutely.
Is this something that we're going to fail again?
Absolutely. It's basically, again, the Republicans need to articulate their solutions, which are excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And this, we can't finish this in 40 seconds.
Maybe
we can continue it. But number one, as any sovereign nation, we need to know who and what's coming across our borders. Big mistake that was made in the Bush administration was after 9/11, we should have secured the border and know who was coming across that. We need migrant workers. We need people coming in from other countries to fill in our labor force because our economy is so good that we need these people. We simply need a way that people can come into this country legally, make money, have protection so that they have health and disability insurance provided by their employer, and so we know who they are. So we know that somebody coming in to pick tomatoes or to work in a computer assembly plant or to be an engineer or to be a physician, who these people are and why they're here. And you mentioned people born here. According to our laws, the way they are right now, if someone's born here, they have a right to be a U.S. citizen.
We're going to pick back up on that in a few minutes after the break. 1-800-687-0790 for your calls for Dr. Don May, who's running for Congress. We'll be right back.
Disagree? Call in now at 770-5790. This is the Chad Hasty Show on News Talk 790 KFYO.
Hey, welcome back to the Chad Hasty Show, the Saturday edition. I'm Matt Crow over from the KFYO News Desk. I've got Dr. Don May here. He's running for Congress against Randy Neugebauer in the Republican primary. I'm going to go right to the phones. Mallory, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Dr. May, you indicated that one of the problems with the Bush administration was failure to secure the border after 9/11. As I remember, Congress passed a law in soon after that authorizing funds to be spent on a fence, a secure fence going from coast to Gulf. As I also recall, the following session of Congress that was dominated by the Democrats defunded that legislation, that law of the land being defunded by the Congress to build that fence, and the fence still hasn't been built.
That's
Is
absolutely
that not correct.
You are absolutely correct there, Mallory. To my understanding, that is the way it happened. Like so many things that are done for the safety of our nation, the Democrats, when they're in power, defund it, whether it's the B-1 or the B-2 bomber or the war in Vietnam or the fence on our southern border. But the fact was it just was not secured, either by a fence or by active military or National Guard or anybody else.
Then the fact that Obamacare is the law of the land and therefore is the reason why it cannot be defunded, an argument made by Democrats.
Yes, that absolutely opposite of what the Democrats have been doing. And as Matt and I discussed at the beginning of my appearance on the program, is that it's incumbent upon the House of Representatives, if they believe that something is not a good law of the land, it is incumbent upon them to use their check and balance capability to not fund that program, such as Obamacare, or as also called the Affordable Care Act. Absolutely, Mallory.
Mallory, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. And Don, in the short time we've got left, let me go over a couple of other topics with you, because I know prospective voters want to get to know you better. You do have a website.
Do have a website. It's www.mayfortexas, because I'm representing the people of specifically of West Texas. Mm-hmm. And that will be up and running shortly. It seems that just virtually every website person in the country has been absorbed with trying to get Obamacare website up and running. So that should be up and running by, I'm thinking, Tuesday or Wednesday of this week.
Secretary Sebelius has been through Texas a couple of times. She's going to be called to testify next week in front of Congress. If you were on that congressional committee who was going to question her, what would you ask her?
One of the things I'd ask is, and she touched on this briefly yesterday, is why did it take 3 years to put a website like this up? Because there are commercial websites out there that handle this volume of people. We look at Facebook, we looked at Twitter, and other entities that handle far, far greater volume per unit time, and they work essentially flawlessly. Why did it take so long? Where did this money go? $500 million, $500 million was put into this, and we really don't have anything to show for it. And the companies out there to start up Facebook, we're talking a few million dollars.
It certainly is a surprise, the amount of money they spent, the amount of time that they had. And this gets back to what I talked to you about earlier when you first came on the show a little while ago. And that is, I mean, that sends shivers down my spine as a customer. But as a beneficiary, but as a provider from the hospital perspective and from the medical profession perspective, I mean, it just must be awful.
It's frightening because we're looking down line, Matt, of this computer technology and this level of incompetence telling physicians what they can do and can't do for patients. Patients are going to die because of this. Patients are going to go without care. And from what I see out there, just from my friends, but what I see in the polls, is that 40% of all the physicians who are practicing right now are going to quit practicing next year.
Looking at state politics really quickly, Wendy Davis, who gained notoriety nationally, now she's going to run for governor, on the abortion laws, the new abortion laws in Texas, the right to life issues and so forth. Does it seem odd to you that the voters in this day and time should be questions raised that doctors who perform abortions should be close to an admitting hospital? I mean, why is that even a topic of conversation? I mean, it seems to me that if you're performing a surgical procedure of any type, and we're talking about life itself here, but any kind of surgical procedure, if you're not within some sort of a safe radius to a hospital with a surgical team, I mean, how do people argue against that?
There is no logical argument against that, Matt. If you're going to, I don't agree with abortion clinics. Mm-hmm. But that said, if somebody's going to have an abortion, that clinic ought to be clean. It should have surgical centers standards. So a lot of women die after abortion procedures in this country. It doesn't get a lot of publicity in the news media, but they die. And that's two lives lost.
Well, I got to tell you, and we're going to have to wrap this up, but Don, go ahead.
We need clean surgical facilities if they are going to perform abortions, and there needs to be a hospital that's prepared if there's an emergency, or if a woman starts bleeding to death, or something comes up, or something goes wrong, or she goes into cardiac arrest, that woman can be transported very quickly to a medical center, either by ambulance or by air or private vehicle, so she can get the care she needs, so she doesn't die because of this procedure or end up in very serious trouble. So if someone's performing an abortion, even though I may not agree with them performing it, they need to have the ability and a working relationship with the hospital so they can quickly get that woman to good care.
Dr. Don May, ladies and gentlemen, he's running for Texas 19 against Randy Neugebauer in the Republican primary. May for Texas is his website's name. It'll be up within a few days. I encourage you to keep checking back. Don will be back on the show later on in the year and through the campaign, of course, and we'll have Neugebauer on as well. But, Don, thank you so much, and I hope
thank
I didn't put you through the ringer on any of these
questions.
I
loved it. I love your
great. You're fast on your feet, and you're going to need that when you get to Washington because, brother, I can tell you, it's not beanball up there. You're going to have it's a tough time.
And that's why I appreciate your hardball questions. Softball questions are of no use.
All right. Don,
thanks. Thank you. God bless.
Thanks again, Dr. May.